but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
This is my nightmare scenario. It just keeps recurring and recurring and recurring. What is about to happen, ladies and gentlemen, is Dan Lanning, the Oregon football coach, man of the world, kid from suburban Kansas City, is going to come on the show, and he's gonna make fun of me for the hair restoration commercial that played during the commercial break. So let's let him get it all out. Get it all out. Go ahead.
I just promised your producer I wouldn't say anything. I'm not got nothing to say. Nothing to say, man.
You know what I need to do? Next time you're coming on, I'm going to do a fake commercial during the commercial. See how you react to it. See how you react to it.
I love it. I just realized, like, hey, I don't want to, you know, affect, you know, people bought their sponsorships. I don't want to mess that up for you, you know. But I just wish you would tap into the resources that you guys are advertising.
Like, I don't. I have a beautiful
bald head. Can you
imagine
you with a mullet? How awesome that would be?
Maybe I should do that for charity. Like, I'll grow it out. We'll see what happens.
I'm telling you.
You know?
Yeah.
I have a beautiful bald head, though. Like, I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm leaning into it.
The truth wouldn't be quite the same if you weren't bald, you know?
Amen.
It wouldn't be.
Amen to
the
that.
The mullet face truth, you know, it just wouldn't be the same.
Doesn't work. Where are you right now? Set the scene. Like, where are you sitting? Where are your feet right now?
I literally just walked into the house. Thursday's the day we wrap up a little bit early. Had a couple earlier meetings today. We start pretty early on Thursday. But, you know, Titans got football practice here in a second. I'm hoping to catch a little bit of that action. Got a couple Zoom calls later on tonight. And, get to see the family a little bit. This is like the one day a week you get to see the fam.
I like that. I'm sorry that I'm intruding on it with this interview, but I like that you're going to get to go to practice. Does that feel good to you to be not in charge at a practice?
It's fun, man. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Titans kind of I see him as a like a strong safety, kind of like he's going to be a big hitter, active.
We're working on the hitting part. He's a jack of all trades. Like he plays a little running back, a little wide out, a little DB, a little safety. You know, he's kind of all over the place. But what I'm excited about is he loves football, which is pretty cool. You know, the other day he came in to hang out with me, and he stayed up late. Until I got home, and he climbed in the bed, and he's like, "Hey, Dad, want to hang out?" And he's like, "Oh my gosh, Dad, you stink! You smell horrible!" I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?" And he reaches, like, "You smell!" I'm like, and then he smells his own hands, and he realizes he's been wearing these football gloves, and it's himself. I was like, "Man, you're trashing me, and it's you that stinks. It's your hands." But it's kind of a cool feeling for your 12-year-old to have stinky hands because he's wearing football gloves, and they, you know, it's, I don't know, it's kind of fired me up, you know. So now he's asking, like, all right, are you allowed to wash football gloves? Do they lose their sticky? So
I love it.
I don't know.
I love it.
I kind of went off on a tangent there, but moments.
I seem to remember in a conversation, the very first conversation I had with your parents, they said you had your high school football pants. You never washed them after your last game. Is that true?
Yeah, we lost to Harrisonville, and on the grass they had like they had painted Harrisonville's blue and Richmond's red and white, and there's like blue stains on my pants, and yeah, we never washed them. Just kind of wanted to remember that loss in the semifinals.
You got the rough. I guess the losses always stay with you, maybe in a way that the wins don't, right? Like still to this day. Why is that?
Oh yeah. Because it matters. When it matters to you, man, that's what you remember those.
Is it that we expect to win, though, and that's part of it? So when we win, that's of course we did. We put in the work. We had a plan. And then when we don't win, we go, okay, what did I do wrong? And you sort of pour through the wreckage looking for Like, how do I get better? How do I improve from this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. But I think, like, when you really mature in life, you start to realize you can win a lot. I mean, you can learn a lot from a win, but you can learn a lot from a loss. And you can be motivated, man. If you're intrinsically motivated and you hate that feeling, like, that can be an unbelievable motivator.
You've been using that intrinsic, extrinsic thing. Is that something that you've been reading about or somebody's been taught? You've been thinking about it, haven't you?
No, I guess I've gotten the question. I've kind of always had that same thought process, but I guess maybe I've gotten a question that's brought up twice this week. Where else did I use it?
It came up in a...
Oh, Jim Rohn. Yeah, I think
yes,
I said it with Jim
Rohn.
Yes,
that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, you want to be intrinsically motivated, man. That's important, right? Are you intrinsically motivated, John?
Yeah, you have to be, because if it's the extrinsic stuff, that's not lasting. That doesn't stay with you. That doesn't, you know, that's transactional. That's not, you know, I think
you get down at some point, right?
Yeah,
you realize it's not fulfilling.
Yeah, it doesn't do it. And then I think it's a hard thing to teach people, though, because so much of, like, our culture becomes about, you know, achieving and getting the trophy or the award, mm-hmm. or the job, or, you know, that's what the money's for. Don Draper in Mad Men, you know, that's what the money's for. It's for it. So it becomes, you know, but having it be part of your nature, having it be internal.
Yeah
it's got to come from within. It's almost religious, isn't it? Like, you know, you grew up in a household that you have belief. It's got to come from within you, right?
For sure. Like, it's just this this mindset that you can affect change and you can create, you know, a little bit for yourself, I think, is part of it for me.
I don't want to dive too deep into it, but I liked what you said about Charlie Kirk and, you know, just kind of the idea of a locker room having people from all walks of life. And, like, can't we all learn from a football locker room where you've got people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different religions, different races, and you guys come together on a game and it's like, this is a machine that is, you know, all pointed in the same direction. Like, I think I even go back to your kid playing sports. I just think it starts really young where you learn to be part of something bigger than yourself and work with other people.
Yeah.
And be tolerant. But I love that you said that. Why was that important to you?
You know, I've always felt like, when you have a stage, when you have an opportunity to speak your mind, like, shame on you if you don't. And, you know, I felt like that there's been a couple times, you know, in life for me where I've had an opportunity to say something that mattered, and you get asked the right question, you get an opportunity to say it, you should answer it how you feel. And, yeah, that was one of those moments, you know, that, like, people are cool. You know, sometimes we, like, lose sight of that, like, how unbelievably impressive is human life. And there's a lot of differences, and there's a lot of people that are different. But when you recognize, like, how special human life is, when you have a kid for yourself, when you know, have, you know, great parents, and you get to experience a cool relationship at work that you're like, man, when I'm around this person, it makes me feel a certain way. And recognize that those people probably do the same thing for other people. Like, that's something we should really value. And I just, you know, at times I think we lose a lot of sight of that. So, hoping this world, man, I'm a glass half full guy. I'm hopeful this world can recognize, like, how cool this place is and how awesome to get to do what all of us get to do. You know, you wake up every day and you make the best of the opportunities you have in front of you. And, you know, why can't everybody have a glass half full, you know? And if we can create some opportunities like that, you know, and recognize that there's going to be differences that, you know, and we can all live in a world that's pretty dang awesome. And it can be awesome for everybody, you know, and even if things aren't going well for you at the moment, that doesn't mean they're going to be going, you know, poor for you the next day. You got an opportunity to go make a change and attack it and see where it goes.
I'm still blown away that I have a job where I get to talk about sports and write about sports. And, you know, this is a silly thing. I'll get on a plane. I'll go cover your game. I'll be at the stadium. I'll write what I think. People seem to care what I write and, you know, they subscribe and that's great. I'll come back and talk about it on radio. You get to go get on a plane. You get to go coach a football game. It doesn't feel like work to me. I know it's hard, but I get the impression you enjoy what you do so much that, you know, you'd be doing it somewhere for something if it weren't at Oregon.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love what I get to do, and there's every job has stuff that is not always the best, but coaching football is a pretty dang good job. Yeah, so it's a lot of fun.
Where does doing an interview like this rank on not the best? Lay it on me. Like, be honest. Like, does this
suck? You're not bad,
does,
man.
Does this no, suck? I'm no, not bad. Is, can I put that on a billboard? Not bad. Dan Lanning said not bad.
No, I don't mind. I don't mind having this combo at all. No, it's this is good. Is this as fun as coaching at football practice? No. That's football practice is a lot more fun. Coaching a game is a whole lot more fun. Watching film is a lot more fun, but like you're on the list. You're not at the bottom.
I'm on the list. I'm gonna put that on my bio. I'm on the list. You enjoy watching film, huh? Like, because I've talked to some guys who go.
Yeah.
So what do you like about watching film? Let's just say you're watching. You don't have to talk about Penn State, but you're watching film of an opponent. Mm-hmm. What is it that you geek out on?
Well, just the part where you get to say at the end, like, okay, what's the best call I could possibly have against this, right? Because every defense, every offense has a strength and has a weakness, right? If you're loaded up to the box to stop the run, then there's an opportunity for a pass. If you're, if you're playing a certain coverage, like every coverage has a strength, every coverage has a weakness, or vice versa. And the opportunity to get to play, you know, checkers or chess in that moment and say, okay, what's the best call that we could have for this, and it answers the issues that are addressed in that play. Like, that's a lot of fun.
So I'm talking to Jerry DiNardo, former head coach, you know him, Big Ten Network. Yeah. And I asked him, I said, you know, Oregon runs this fake punt against Oregon State. I said, they didn't need to run that play to win that game, but they ran it. And I said to DiNardo, did they run that just so they give Penn State something to think about? And he starts laughing. And he says, we used to do that. We used to put a play in. We'd run a play just so, you know, give them a look that they have to think about. Is that what you mean when you're playing chess? I mean, are you doing stuff like that? Or do other coaches and have you had other stops run plays just to go, hey, we're going to run something just to give next week's opponent something to think about?
Well, I think every week you're putting stuff in and trying to run stuff in a game that you're hoping sets up stuff for the future for sure.
You ran a lot of cloud coverage against Oregon State. See what I'm doing? I'm flexing there a little bit. A little bit of media flex.
Mm-hmm.
Was that dictated by what Oregon State did, or is that just something in general you guys like? You guys feel comfortable with your personnel playing a lot of cover too?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Like, you always want to go out there and run what you think can win and create success in a game, but it's something that we've come comfortable with.
Anything more obnoxious than a media member trying to talk football like they know what they're talking about?
It's pretty funny. It is pretty funny. So, but like, sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's you know, it is what it is. But no, I don't mind.
But what I do, because, all right, so when I played my high school and community college football, I was a receiver and a DB. And so I can tell when you're in cover two, or I can tell when, you know, I'm looking at the safety pre-snap. I'm looking at the safeties. What are they doing? I can't tell what's going on at the line of scrimmage. I don't have that level of, but I know enough to talk to people like Nick Aliotti or Anthony Newman or whoever if I have a question.
Yeah.
So you start off what, like, where is your area of expertise when you're in high school and maybe even at college, William Jewell College? And then what part of the game did you really have to learn?
Well, I had to learn it all. You know, what I thought I knew and what I knew is night and day. But I was always a defensive guy. I played both ways in high school and then played defense when I was in college, played outside linebacker. And then my first coaching job was actually wide receivers and DBs. So you kind of coach on both sides and special teams. So I feel like I got exposed to a lot, early. But where I learned the most is once I became a GA. And what I thought I knew, I realized I didn't know anything. And then even, you know, probably the next most influential year in my career was going to Alabama and being a graduate assistant and learning, you know, just both sides of the ball there, I think was really important for my career.
Because when you're a GA, are you breaking down things, breaking down film? You're working closely with, you know, guys who have been doing it a lot longer than you at a higher level, and you're just soaking all that up?
Yeah, I was in charge of breakdowns at Alabama. So you break down the opponent. You're typing in all the information that you see and recognize. And then for me, like the other place that I really learned kind of both sides of the ball was putting myself in a situation where I'm drawing every single card for practice. So like the scout team's going to run a play, right? And you're going to draw up the play. And then you're going to say, okay, wait, how would they block this if we ran this defense? How would they block this if we ran this call? How would the wide receiver adjust this route if we were in this coverage? So it kind of gave me an opportunity to learn a little bit of both sides of the ball and ask questions. But that was kind of a job I took a lot of pride in when I was at Alabama, is I'm going to draw every single scout card and put myself in a situation where, okay, this is how I think they would block it versus an even front versus an odd front. Or, you know what? Then you start to study and you're like, you know, they never run this play versus an odd front. So maybe it's a check play. Mm. They only run it versus an even front. You just start to learn a little bit more football when you have to do those things.
Dan Lanning with us, Oregon football coach. When do you guys leave? When do you get on the plane and why with the timing? I'm always curious, like, you know, what you're thinking as far as how much time you want to spend on the ground there versus, you know, get in, get out. Or you're like SEAL Team 6. You want to be there as, you know, least possible. Or how do you get acclimated, all that?
So, you know, we played Northwestern. We played an early game. Obviously, a time zone change. It was kind of 9 a.m. our time. So we left. We ended up leaving Thursday, right? But this week, we were playing a night game there. So we'll leave tomorrow morning after we finish our meetings and our walk. We'll have a walkthrough in the morning, and we'll travel over there.
Are you talking with, like, scientists to figure that stuff out? Or is that just, you know, your prior experience? You go, hey, this is about when we want to be there. We don't want to be too early and have a bunch of sitting around.
No, we visit with Bill Nye about it and kind of got his opinion. We talked to NFL teams, sports science. Like, we kind of developed a plan this summer of, hey, when are these games going to be played and what's our thought process based on when the games are played. So if it's a night game, don't feel like we necessarily have to travel 2 days in advance. If it's an earlier game when you're traveling three time zones, then, yeah, you can change that model. And again, we'll evaluate it after this trip and say, okay, yeah, that worked well for us, or no, we wish we would have done it different. But we've adapted from last year. We've adapted from the year before based on, you know, how far you're traveling, when you're traveling, and why you do what you do.
Now, I'll say this so you don't have to, but Michigan and Ohio State, this wouldn't happen to them. But you have, like, seven opponents that will have all this extra time to prepare for you. Penn State's coming off a bye. You're not. You know, that has to stick in your craw a little bit. Like, you know, can you make a little noise about that? Will the Big Ten listen?
Yeah, no comment.
Yeah, I'll say it, so you don't have to. You know, he said,
yeah,
no comment.
I mean, should, right? We're traveling 16,000 miles this year, and we play seven teams that have more prep time than we do. That's unique, isn't it?
Yeah, and I keep saying,
it's almost,
you know,
like they didn't want us in the Big Ten or something, right?
I'm just looking at it going,
we snuck our way in, didn't we?
The uninvited guest. That's, you know, that's what that should be your motto. We're the uninvited guest. You know, go win the thing. All right, you got it. I'm not going to ask you about the whiteout. It's too much. Everybody's asked you. Who cares? But I will ask you this. From a communication standpoint, when you got, you know, offensive linemen, can you prepare for it? Or is it just like, guys, it's going, like, occasionally something bad's going to happen, and it's going to be how resilient we are and how we react to, you know, situational stuff like that with noise and crowd noise and the environment.
I mean, you do as much as you possibly can, but you're not going to recreate some of those things. But yeah, you do as much as you can. And when you get there, you know, you hope your players say, oh, well, Tuesday practice was kind of hard. It was kind of like this. You know, that's what you're hoping. You hope you get to say, okay, oh, Wednesday was kind of like this when we did this period. And, try to replicate it the best you can and play well enough that it ultimately doesn't become a huge factor in the game. But those are the things you can't control. The one way you can't control is with how you play.
All right. I've taken enough of your time. Go to your son's practice. Enjoy your night with your family. And I'll see you in Happy Valley.
Sounds good. Thanks, John. Have a great one.
All right. There he goes. Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach. I hope you got all the answers to all the questions that were burning questions. I always love when media members try to talk about 12 personnel, 13 personnel. What front were they in? Let's be real. There's a game within the game that's going on with these coaches that is next level stuff. And I don't think Oregon needed to run that fake punt against Oregon State last week. They didn't need the first down. They didn't need the extra possession. I have to think there was strategy in Oregon going, yeah, we're going to give Penn State one more thing to think about. And Jerry DiNardo will be on tomorrow's show. And my pre-interview with him, he said, you know, sometimes you run something just to get it in the other team's head. And then he goes, I've been the other team. And he says, sometimes you see it and you go, they're just running that to get in our head. We're not going to waste time prepping for it. But you kind of have to. Dan Lanning going out to his kids' game. I like that. They'll be making the trip and getting into Happy Valley, not spending a whole bunch of time there. But they got a football game on Saturday night. It's a 7:30 kick in Pennsylvania. 4:30 here on the West Coast on NBC. It'll be Ohio State and Washington in Seattle. I tend to think Ohio State's going to cover that spread. It has been bet down from like 13 to 10 to now, what is it, 8, 8.5? You know, a lot of money flying on Washington, and a lot of people maybe not believing that Ohio State with a freshman quarterback can go in there. I'm certainly Rick Neuheisel not thinking so, but we got a big football weekend. Georgia, Alabama, we'll talk about it all coming up, plus the 5 at 5, top of the hour.